This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you on the programme this morning on till 12 noon. Coming in from a caller, they say, good morning Donal Ray, Michael McClafferty's comments. May I please ask what I'm supposed to do with my dog when travelling from Donegal to Dublin, which I do on a regular basis? Scaremongering does not serve us well. We need to recognise that Ireland is one country. There is no need for us to bolster the divide in our society more than it already exists. Now, I think in fairness, what Councillor McClafferty was referring to wasn't travel within the island of Ireland. He was speaking about travel from Europe and other countries that may have rabies outside of the island of Ireland into the island of Ireland, and that would count equally for Northern Ireland and for the Republic as well. And in fairness, I mean, yes, and I he was right in terms of, he was referencing ads that would be on the TV, and they were very graphic ads. And I remember too, if you were going, obviously, international travel wasn't as big when I was in my sort of a child and in my teens as it would be now. But certainly, I remember the first time I was taking a ferry over to France with the Scouts back in the 1970s. I remember even in Rosslare Port, there were sort of big, huge, you know, rabies is a dangerous, and pictures of, you know, dogs foaming at the mouth. And I mean, rabies was a big thing. And rabies was the sort of thing you were sort of slightly scared of. And I was, yeah, afraid of rabies when I was a child. Because, and Councillor McClafferty was right, the advertising with regards to rabies was so, you know, prevalent at the time, and you don't see it anymore. And, you know, rabies does remain a threat, as you heard Gerard Rorty say. I mean, someone dies of rabies worldwide every 10 minutes. I mean, and that is a shocking statistic. And it is, by all accounts, a really, really horrendous disease. Now, we have managed through vigilance and through good policy to keep rabies off the island of Ireland. Now, Edwin Poots, as Gerard Rorty said, Edwin Poots has more or less said, look, we do not need to implement regulations, because what tends to happen, and we do have a geopolitical situation, yes, and geopolitically the European Union stops at Bridgend. Geopolitically, the European Union stops at Calais. It stops at Auchnacloy. I mean, that is the geopolitical situation. The reality is, this is an island. And that's the reality. And sometimes you do have to put sort of the politics of it to one side and you know, recognise the geographical reality. This is an island. And the best way for the island of Ireland to tackle the issue of rabies is to treat the island of Ireland as an island. And one of the arguments you're going to get when we're talking about all this protocol stuff and all this stuff, you know, linked with Brexit and all the identity politics and all the stuff that goes with it, one of the really important things that we must remember as people is that when we talk about North-South cooperation, this is the sort of thing we're talking about. We're talking about the reality of a shared agricultural network. And I mean, the fact is, a field, you know, on the border at Calais or wherever, you know, one field and the field beside it are technically in two different geopolitical countries. But I mean, you know, they could be the same field. And really, it makes sense to have the same policy governing both. It's to everybody's benefit. And that was, I think, in fairness, said by Gerard Rorty there. And he was absolutely correct in saying that. So, yeah, Michael's comments. In fairness, when Michael McClafferty is talking about the danger and the risk of rabies, he isn't talking about bringing a dog from Downpatrick to Donegal or bringing a dog from Port New to Portadown. That's not what he's talking about in this instance, I think, in fairness to him. Interesting to read on the Donegal News this morning that the former Donegal County Council Chief Executive, Seamus Neely, has been handed a senior role within Inland Fisheries Ireland. He was appointed after the Environment Minister, Eamon Ryan, removed the three remaining members of the IFI board on a no-fault basis. He's asked Seamus Neely and former Carlow County Council Chief Tom Barry to perform the functions of the agency, which protects fish stocks and habitats. The IFI has been in some disarray over the past number of years, with five members resigning as a result of a series of internal disputes and allegations, some of which have been made by way of protected disclosure. And it's a good thing that a former Chief Executive of Donegal County Council, who knows the situation with regards to fisheries in this country, both in terms of the inshore fisheries and all other aspects of fisheries as well, because God knows it's been discussed by Donegal County Council often enough, to know that Seamus Neely, someone that has that knowledge, is now in a key position within Inland Fisheries Ireland. That is going to be a matter of comfort, I think, to a number of people, because it's always good to know that if you are lobbying for something, if you need something, if you're in a situation where you're dependent on a body, be it a government body, be it an NGO or whoever, it's always good to know that there is someone on that body and someone involved in that body who has your interests at heart, but more than has your interests in heart, understands your interests. Because so much of what happens at the moment, I think, is because there are people in positions that don't understand the underlying realities. And we hear this so often about, you know, people in offices in Dublin that don't understand what it's like in Donegal. And there is an element of truth to that. I was speaking to someone quite recently who attends meetings regularly in Dublin. And what they noticed was that the people in Dublin who set the meeting times inevitably will set the meeting times at times that suit them. And it doesn't seem to strike them that, oh, if someone is travelling from Donegal, if they are to be there for a meeting at 10 o'clock, they're going to have to be leaving home before 7 in the morning, because they're going to have to, you know, hit that long journey down and then potentially hit Russia on the outskirts of Dublin as well. And it's like, you know, and the person I was speaking to said they were particularly upset one day because there was a big discussion about when a meeting was going to be, and they were quite happy to call the meeting for 10 in the morning with someone travelling down to Donegal to the meeting. And then someone on the other side of Dublin said, oh, hang on a tick, the traffic is going to be for you at that stage. And the response was, all right, that's grand, we better push it back to 12. And the feeling was, hang on a tick, you're prepared to push a meeting back to 12 because someone is going to have difficulty travelling from one side of Dublin to the other, but you're quite happy to schedule a meeting for 10 and not even think about the fact that someone in Donegal is facing a journey of over 200 kilometres. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's the 9 till noon show. It's 30 minutes past 10. You can text us on 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000. It's comments at highlandradio.com. And you can also get in touch via social media. We're at Highland Radio on Twitter. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. And we're broadcasting live, by the way, on Facebook and YouTube as well. We're going to be talking about that Milford Town Centre First plan in just a moment. Before that, we're going to have to take a short break. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, earlier during the newspaper review, we referenced the fact that as of today, a public consultation has been opened into the first phase of the Town Centre First Master Plan initiative, which has been implemented by the Department of Rural and Community Development as part of our rural future. People in Milford being asked to contribute to this process to determine how the town centre is going to develop. Delighted to be joined on the line by a man who knows Milford very, very well indeed, the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, Councillor Liam Blaney. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed, thank you. Liam, we have often over the years discussed Milford and the development of the town. It must be good news for you to know that finally we see movement on this development plan, and finally something seems to be happening in terms of getting some real investment into the town centre.
Well, hopefully it's the beginning of it, Donal. About 2 years ago, I had a motion passed with Donegal County Council that Milford will be the next town looked at for rural regeneration when the opportunity came around. And thankfully, they were true to their word. And the next opportunity was the Town Centre's First Plan. And Milford was selected by the councillors for the Donegal application. And we were successful, along with a number of other towns around the country. It's the first time that this has been tried. And it's going to be set the footprint for future Town Centre First. But look, for the people of Milford, and I know Milford very well, but not as well as the local people know it. And I think it's very important that they get their say and that they do make their voices heard, whether it's online, whether it's the public consultation next Wednesday, or whether it's the meeting as part of the stakeholders that's going to be held within the next fortnight. It was supposed to be held tonight. But because it's midterm, a lot of the parents of young children, that's a school children, couldn't make it tonight, so it's going to be rescheduled again for sometime within the next fortnight. And we're going to try and have an opportunity for everybody, even the school children, because there is questionnaires going out to school as well, an opportunity for the national school and the secondary school children to get involved in this as well. I think it's very important that nobody feels left out of it and everybody makes a contribution of some kind to it.
How does this work in terms
of, to make a decision, they end up again that they're equipped with all information that can be given to them?
How does this work then in terms of investment? Because the council will assess it in along with the GM associates who are actually sort of facilitating all this. You know, the council and GM design will sit down, will come up with a plan. The plan is finally formulated after public consultations, after widespread discussions in the area. What happens then? Is there a firm commitment from government that if council says, yes, we have X number of projects we want to advance in Milford, it's going to cost, I'll pluck a figure out of the air, €3.6 million. Have you any, you know, guarantee from government that that 3.6 million or whatever the figure may be will be forthcoming?
Well, you know, there's no full guarantee. They are funding and they're going to fund these types of projects. And whenever you see the rural regeneration that funding that Rathmullen has received, that's just the Milford area. There's the number right around the whole county. And this is a continuation of that, but it's to have a plan in place beforehand. And part of this plan as well is that there's three or four projects going to be taken through to Part 8 planning as part of this process, so that there'll be shovel-ready projects whenever the funding's going to be announced. And, you know, that's as much of a guarantee we can get from the government, from the departments in charge of it. But on past experience over the last few years, I'll be confident enough that if we get this plan in place, that funding will follow.
One group that's been absolutely central to development in Milford and a discussion on the future of Milford over the past while has been the Milford and District Resource Centre. Its manager, Declan Meehan, joins us on the line. Declan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. Good morning, Liam.
Declan, we read from the Tyrconnell Tribune during the newspaper review earlier this morning that the MDRC feels it's being left out of this process, and having been centrally involved in initial discussions on this, you suddenly feel Donegal County Council has left you literally out in the cold.
Well, I suppose just to clarify on that, Donal, the Town Centre First Plan is a very specific and new programme and initiative that's come from the Department of Rural and Community Development. Part of its, I suppose, ethos and spirit and part of its guidelines is that a town team is pulled together by the local authority in the town, which is representative of residents, businesses and community stakeholders, as well as community and voluntary groups. That town team is meant to be the absolute core of the process from start to finish over the course of the town plan process. Now, the council have not put together a town team, and they haven't put that formally constituted group together, which means that the community stakeholders don't have a formal voice at the table constantly. Instead, what the council have suggested is that because time is so tight, and just to clarify for your listeners, most of these plans, like the ones that Liam has mentioned there, with Melton, Rathmullen being two local recent examples, these plans usually take place over the course of maybe 12 to 18 months. Milford actually has to have this wrapped up with the council by the end of June this year, because the whole of 2022, no real action was taken by the council on the plan. So we were told that because there wasn't really time to pull together a town team, that there would be a community stakeholder event which was due to take place this evening, but was postponed for the reasons that Liam outlined. So it's not that MDRC has specifically been excluded. It's that all community representatives that are meant to be formulated into that town team do not get their place at the table, which is actually meant to be at the centre of the whole process and not something that is just kind of tokenistically consulted on a one-off basis.
Liam Blaney, from your own point of view, and you obviously will know Declan well, and you've worked with Declan on many, many projects, no doubt, over the years. I mean, is this something the council has dropped the ball on? And more importantly, let's look to the future, is this something that can be resolved and resolved easily?
I don't know what there is to resolve, start off with, Donal, but, you know...
By starting it off, by formulating a town team?
Well, as far as I'm aware, that the council has gone through the proper procedures and the processes. And, you know, the councillors have already had numerous workshops. There has been meetings with cross directorate. And now it's the public's turn to get involved in it. And this should be a good news story for the town of Milford, and I hope it comes out as a good news story for the town of Milford. And I hope that the town benefits greatly from it. And there has been different projects down through the years done with Milford, and some may be positive for the town, some seem to not be positive for the town, and I think this is our chance to get it as near right as we can. And that's where the public come into this. And it's very, very important to hear the public's voice. The stakeholders, which Declan's MRDC is part of, will get their opportunity, as well as the public consultation process, whether it's online or whether it is at the drop-in event that's on next Wednesday evening from 3 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And I want to stress, it's very, very important that as many people as possible attend that drop-in event, because we want every voice heard in Milford, including the school children, who's going to have an opportunity as well. As far as the council is concerned, we already have had a number of meetings. We have expressed the time frame that is set out. We hope it's achievable. It is a tight time frame, but I'm glad that the council has that urgency about this plan, that they are trying to make it as urgent as possible and trying to have the whole thing completed before the end of the year. And I welcome that, rather than something that drags out for a long time. And you know, it's because I think that we have so many projects and so many projects getting funded in the county that the council maybe is having difficulty trying to keep up with them, and they have new staff being assigned to new roles on it. Yeah. And hopefully this will help to speed up the process. Declan talked about there was nothing done for 2022. There was plenty of things done in the background in 2022. And look, I just hope that this is a positive story for Milford and it doesn't turn out to be somebody feeling that they're excluded, because nobody is going to be excluded. We don't want anybody to be excluded. Yeah. I want everybody to get involved in this process.
I think in fairness, Declan has made it quite clear that, I mean, obviously he and the MDRC back the plan. They're urging people to get involved in the consultation and they're speaking of its importance. Declan, do you believe that the setting up of this town team should, in effect, give you some sort of say in the decisions that are being made? Because it's one thing to be consulted and to make your views known, which no doubt you and the people of Milford will do. Do you believe that through the town team, people like yourselves, people working on the coalface in Milford, should have some sort of say in the final plan that's formulated, that it should go beyond just consultation?
Yeah, absolutely. I do believe that, because that is the exact point of a town centre first plan. It is meant to be community driven. And that's exactly why the guidelines provide for a town team to be formulated as part of the process. They're meant to be there from the very start of the process. Liam has said that obviously there were meetings taking place in the background in 2022, but that's to miss the point. They're not meant to be taking place in the background, because the town team was meant to be part of those discussions from the get-go, and that didn't happen, and there's no sign of that changing. Liam is also correct in saying that this is a fantastic opportunity for Milford, and it is a good news story. And all I want to do is to highlight the issues that exist with it, the shortcomings that exist currently. It's an extremely tight time frame, and we hope that it will be able to be delivered in that time. And I similarly want to encourage everyone who has an interest in Milford to take part in the consultations. But yeah, the whole idea of this was that the community was at the heart of a decision-making process from start to finish, and that hasn't happened and still hasn't happened. And, you know, a community stakeholder event to take place now within the next 2 weeks is not meant to be just a consultative process. It is meant to be, as I say, at the very core of the entire process. The whole idea of the Town Centre First Plan is that it's a grassroots-driven plan that comes directly from the needs and wants of key stakeholders who are working on the ground every day. And as much as the council have had a few meetings towards the end of 2022, not enough action was taken on, which leaves us in the position now where we're 4 months away from the deadline for having to have this completed. That's definitely doable, so long as everyone kind of plays their part in it. But similarly then, we also have a situation where during those times when those meetings were taking place, those councillors who were meeting with council officials about this town centre first plan about Milford, you know, not one councillor lifted the phone to contact MDRC. And we've been working on rural regeneration and town renewal over the past 3.5 years with very successful projects like the Streetscape Enhancement Initiative last year, Town and Village Renewal in 2020, and other community development initiatives over that period. So it's just about ensuring that the community is at the heart of this. And because of the process as it is now, and perfect as it is, the only way that that seems to be possible is not to have the formal role for a town team. And instead, it's up to everyone in the community to ensure that they have their say as part of the online consultation and as part of the drop-in next Wednesday in the council offices.
You have been given a commitment there by Councillor Liam Blaney, the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, that community stakeholder event will take place. He's made it clear it wasn't cancelled in any way as a slight to groups like yourselves or as a way of excluding anyone, and that was never the intention. That what he said was because of the midterm break, so many people were away, people actually wanted it to be rescheduled so they could actually attend. So from that point of view, I mean, that community stakeholder event will still take place, and I take it you will still take a very active role in it.
Oh, we absolutely will. We will certainly be there, and we'll be encouraging all our partner organisations like the sports clubs and the schools and other community and voluntary organisations as well as resident associations to take part in that. But again, it is about ensuring that the maximum amount of people who know Milford and who live in Milford and work and study in Milford have their say to ensure that this plan comes from the community. And that is the most important thing going forward. An opportunity like this does not come along very often for towns and villages like Milford. It's a €100,000 plan that will dictate the direction Milford takes in terms of inward investment and funding for key projects going forward for over a decade to come. So it is vital that it's gotten right. It is a shame that it has been left kind of to the last minute, but as imperfect as a process that we have now, it is what we have. There is no plan B coming down the track. So I would encourage everyone to engage with the process as it is through the online consultation and the drop-in consultation next Wednesday.
Liam Blaney, it certainly seems that whatever differences there are between the council and the MDRC in terms of the formulation of the town team and what may have happened in 2022 or not happened, as the case may be, are you satisfied now that coming out of this discussion, people in Milford can be sure that there is a united front and that this isn't in any way tinged with any form of controversy or any sort of row, that this is everyone working together for the benefit of the area?
Well, you know, it hasn't been a last-minute effort. It has been ongoing this last, the guts of 2 years since the motion from the council. And I acknowledge the good work the Milford Resource Centre does, and the town of Milford. But it's elected representatives that make the final decision on it. And I would like more involvement from Milford Resource Centre with the councillors, with the elected members, which there has been, I would say, very minimal, to be honest. Why that is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But as far as the state enhancements is concerned, as I proposed the town of Milford for it, it was backed by all the councillors in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District, and thankfully we got the funding a couple of years ago for it. And I have to acknowledge and appreciate, once that funding came, the amount of work that the Milford District Resource Centre done to ensure that all the shop fronts and the painting of the house and that was all done, and it made a huge difference to the town of Milford. But I would like us to be able to work a bit closer together, not pulling apart and looking to take over from elected members. We're there for a reason, and hopefully now that this plan is moving forward at speed, that we all can work together for the betterment of the town, because we do not want a negative message going out where the department sees that Milford is not happy and we don't know what will happen down the line.
Well, look, there's three councillors in the specific Milford electoral area. There's yourself, there's John O'Donnell, and of course now there's Pádraig McGarvey. Can I suggest that yourself, John and Pádraig, sit down with Declan and his colleagues, have a cup of coffee, have a chat, and if there are any differences or if there are any, differences in opinion, hammer them out and have a chat, because it seems to me that I'm talking to two people who want exactly the same thing, have exactly the same priorities, and are equally committed and equally focused on achieving something. And it seems to me that there is an absolutely united front in Milford, and, you know, it should be very, very easy to, if there is any lingering issue, that should be very easily resolved over a cup of coffee, and perhaps it's time to do that.
Yeah, and look, the last meeting we had on was on Tuesday morning with a two-hour meeting there on it. I know there's three councillors in the Milford electoral area, but it's the full municipal district, which is 10 councillors, that has a say and has a vote on it at the end of the day. And I have to say, the 10 councillors was present at the meeting on Tuesday morning. And it shows interest that they have in the Milford area, the councillors of Letterkenny area has in the Milford electoral area as well. And I have to say, it works the other way, the same way. We work with the Letterkenny councillors and we attend their workshops and meetings that they have as well, so we're kept informed of what's happening at Aghini. So when something does come in front of us that we have to have a vote on, that we know what we're voting on. And thankfully there is that participation from all members, and it's important that we all do work together and ensure that Milford is benefits from this, not that anything negative is about it. But I do appreciate, Donald, what you said, and certainly I'm open to any meetings at all with anybody in Milford, and any stakeholders and all stakeholders. And unfortunately, I won't be available for the public consultation next Wednesday. I'd hope to be there for it all day, but I'm unavoidably won't be present for it. But I do hope to talk to plenty of people in Milford between now and then, and after that as well, to ensure that all voices is heard in Milford, and that we try and get as best master plan as we can possible, because this is going to be a template for other towns on other calls for future town centre first plans. This is a template for other towns that will be following, so it's important that we ensure that we get this right, and there's not nothing negative comes out from it or comes from it at the very end of it.
Councillor Liam Blaney Cahirlick of Donegal County Council, thank you very much indeed. Declan, I want to give the final word to yourself as manager of the Milford and District Resource Centre. I mean, it is an important consultation. It's gotten underway today. Consultation lasts until March 7th. That public consultation taking place, as we said, next week, but you can engage online as well. It's Milford Town Centre firstplan.com, I think, is the website. Now, all the details are on our own website, details on Donegal County Council's website as well, donegalco.ie, and you'll also get the details, I'm sure, through the MDRC's social media and Facebook pages as well. Declan, exciting times ahead for Milford. Whatever may have gone, there's no doubt, from what you've been saying, you're going to be front and centre in this discussion and this consultation.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, BAME obviously had put down a motion a few years ago, and we've been lobbying behind the scenes directly with the department. In fact, one of the things that kind of came to light over this town centre first plan was that Milford was not actually the town that had been put forward by the county council, but because we were lobbying the Department of Rural and Community Development directly, that's why Milford ended up being selected. So, I mean, we have a really, really passion for this. We think that it's going to be excellent for Milford. We just want to ensure that the whole community takes part in it and has their say. And as you say, Donal, gets on to MilfordTownCentreFirst.com for that consultation and drop in next Wednesday. This is vital that everyone's voice is heard, and this is going to be a fantastic result for Milford going forward.
Declan Meehan, manager of MDRC, and indeed Councillor Liam Blaney, thank you both very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Caller asks, does Milford have the population to be called a town, or is it a village? I think Milford is absolutely certainly a town, and I don't have the actual population figure to hand at this point in time, but let's put it this way, Donegal County Council calls it a town, the Milford District Resource Centre calls it a town, and most importantly, the department calls it a town, and the government has recognised it as a town and is giving it a town centre first designation for this year. So yeah, Milford is a town. It's official. Now, we're going to go to Zoom, and a very important event is taking place on Saturday next. It's a rally for diversity, not division. It's taking place at 1 p.m. at Market Square in Letterkenny on this coming Saturday. I'm joined by two guests from the Donegal Intercultural Platform, joined by Nolunga Shalogo, who'll be one of the speakers at that event, also joined by Paul Kernan. Paul and Nolunga, you're both very welcome indeed.
Thank you, Donald.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure to have you. This is part of a national series of rallies that are taking place all over the country. Important, Nolunga, that this takes place, and it takes place now.
It's very, very important that it's taking place nationwide and even here in Letterkenny.
What message do you want to get across at this event as one of the speakers?
In this, in our own organization, we stand for inclusion, diversity, and equality. We just want people to come together, and we support all the communities.
Paul, turning to yourself from the point of view of the intercultural platform, it is a very important body that you represent, because even the name itself, it's an intercultural platform, because one of the most diversifying things. And one of the most insidious things that can happen is you get a us versus them kind of debate, as if there was some sort of cohesive them. The reality is there isn't. There's a multitude of different cultures, and everyone that walks in through your office door is going to be different. Everyone that walks in through your office door has got a different culture, a different perspective, and then has got something different to offer.
Absolutely. And I suppose some people ask us, what's the difference between intercultural and multicultural? And I suppose for us, multicultural can just be recognizing that there are many different cultures. Intercultural is when we interact, where we learn together, share together, and learn about each other's backgrounds and cultures. And as you suggested, it actually makes for a richer community, a richer Donegal, a richer Ireland, with all of those diverse cultures working together, living together.
In terms of the organisation of the rally, 1:30 Market Square on Saturday in Letterkenny, important that it is taking place here, and important that there is a large turnout from every section of society and from every area of Donegal.
Absolutely. As you said earlier, Donal, there's a big national march in Dublin at exactly the same time, Saturday the 18th at 1:30. And I know in Cork and in Galway, there's similar activities taking place. I mean, I've been struck by the huge community supports, not just in response to the Ukrainian community arriving, but over a number of years. The welcomes that have happened, the sports clubs, the community clubs, the women's groups that have opened their arms and welcomed. And this is an opportunity for us all to come together. It has been difficult. We've had a difficult year in the country in terms of the impact of the war. We've had cost of living issues. We've been coming out of COVID. So it's been challenging, but we thought it would be worthwhile to come together, stand together and share friendship and share the market square together.
No longer, one of the things you're asking people to do is to bring flags, bring posters, bring banners and bring friends and family. That very much you want this to be colourful, you want this to be celebratory. This isn't a protest, this is a celebration.
Yes, it is a celebration for us all to stand with all the communities, to celebrate each other and to evaluate equity.
Paul, how many different cultures do we have in Donegal at this point? Because, I mean, you know, I suspect if every nationality now living in Donegal were to bring a flag, there'd be a hell of a lot of flags down at Market Square.
I think it's like when you print something, the minute you print it, it's out of date. If I give you an estimate now, it'll be different tomorrow. But certainly, I'm really looking forward. In April, we're going to get the more detailed census figures. And you might recall 2016, 7.5% of the population in Donegal were born outside Donegal.
Yeah.
We expect that to be maybe double because we suspect that many of the Ukrainian community who arrived from early March onwards were included in that census. But there are, let's just say, many and a growing diverse community that makes up Donegal now.
And obviously there has been a focus over the course of the past year on Ukraine, but the intercultural platform has been there long before the influx of people seeking refuge from that distressing situation. I mean, from your point of view, and you've been with the Intercultural Platform now for some time, we've had a couple of conversations over the past couple of years. It must be very rewarding to be able to share that and to absorb that, because I'm sure you're learning every day. I'm sure you're getting new perspectives every day with the people you're meeting.
Absolutely. I mean, working with Nulunga every day is a school day. But also working with all the different communities that are now in Donegal. And it was really timely, as you say, we've been around since 2009. We actually got core funding from the Irish government back in January last year. Within weeks, the first of the Ukrainian community started to arrive. So we've a lot of experience. And as you say, we've been around for some time. But also we were able to be there when the first of the Ukrainians arrived. So yeah, timely, and it is really rewarding.
And it's important that there are people like yourselves who are there ready to take up these challenges, because, you know, if there hadn't been people like yourselves there to actually, you know, help when the Ukrainian people started coming over, they were coming in a hurry, they were coming in a very distressed state, and were those supports not on the ground immediately available the moment they arrived, it could have been a much more distressing situation for them. So really important that you were there.
Yeah.
It is a culture shock to everyone, Donald.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I came here 22 years ago, and we were the only maybe 5-6 families in Letterkenny, you know, from Africa. But now the Letterkenny is just very, very different, full of all colors, all people from all backgrounds. Even in our office, every day we learn new things, you know, from these cultures and communities.
One of the things I've been wondering, and maybe this is a really unfair question, but we haven't yet seen too much. There's been a couple, but we're not seeing as many players of, say, African origin or in international origin joining the football clubs, getting involved in GAA and things like that. I mean, it's going to be slow to change, I suspect. But I would have thought before too long we're going to have a situation where a Donegal GAA team will be fielded with a number of African-born players or players of African origin on that particular team. I mean, that day is coming, surely.
Absolutely. Not only that, but I mean, we were contacted just yesterday by a sports club in the Twin Towns area, and they're planning, we were joking, they were planning a community day, and I said, I know what you're doing. You're planning a recruitment day. They're looking to build their team and to build their talent pool. And absolutely, that day, if it hasn't already arrived, it's coming very soon.
Paul and Alunga, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. I mean, we wish you all the best, obviously, with the event. 1:30 on Saturday at the Market Square in Letterkenny. It's part of a national network. It's a celebration, as we said. Bring flags, bring banner, dress colourfully, bring your friends, bring your family. And it's a rally for diversity, not division.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you both very much indeed. And let's move on, because you will have heard in the news, and indeed we referenced it in the papers this morning as well, that Nicola Sturgeon has confirmed she's resigning as Scotland's First Minister after more than 8 years in the role. The SNP leader said she knew in her head and in her heart that this was the right time to step down. Regular listeners to the show will recognise Graham, who is a resident of Scotland and a regular contributor to the 9 till noon show on all matters Scottish. So when we wanted someone to comment on this particular development, who better to turn to? Graham, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. Graham, Nicola Sturgeon, a lot of the papers, the shock announcement by Nicola Sturgeon. Was it a shock to everyone in Scotland?
Yeah, I think it was a shock to almost everyone. I mean, there was one pro-independence blog that actually leaked the resignation the day before yesterday. But aside from that, I mean, I was shocked as well. I could see it coming, but I just didn't know it was going to be yesterday.
Is there one particular reason why she's going? Or because very often in something like this, I mean, someone says, oh, I want to spend more time with my family, but give some sort of wishy-washy excuse. She just said, I knew in my head and in my heart it was time to go. Was this prompted by anything in particular, or is it like a cumulative decision made on the back of a number of strands?
It's very much a cumulative thing, Donald. There's been quite a lot of quite serious pressures on Nicola Sturgeon recently, these have included the gender recognition reform Scotland bill that was blocked by the UK Parliament last month, an Audit Scotland report on missing funds of £128 million plus another £30 million, that's money from the public and the Scottish Government, has disappeared. There's also a police investigation into missing 600,000 of independence supporters' money. Lastly, probably another big thing is Sturgeon had challenged the UK Government and lost regarding the requirement to obtain permission to hold an independence referendum. She was told by the Supreme Court that she would need this permission, and that meant that she lost the case. And that was just last month on the 20th. No, it wasn't. It was actually in November, the 22nd of November last year. So all these things are all arising currently. I can imagine the pressure of these things alone would be quite significant.
So the next question, the obvious question really, I suppose, is she jumping or is she being pushed?
Now, that's a very interesting question. My personal feeling on that is that she is actually jumping, because Nicola Sturgeon is a very clever woman, she could see the writing on the wall. She's admitted herself that she's felt like this for quite some time. So I think that she has decided to go. There doesn't appear to be an obvious replacement, so it's not as if the SNP hierarchy have been conspiring to get rid of her, as we've seen in other political parties in the UK in comparatively recent times. So, yes, I think jumping rather than pushing.
Yeah. But in a sense, possibly jumping in advance of probably being pushed in the not-too-distant future, perhaps. Would that be a fair way of putting it?
That is very interesting, what you've just said, because the challenge to the UK government regarding permission to hold a referendum, that one of the alternatives was her plan to treat the next UK election as a de facto independence vote within Scotland. And this is to be discussed at a special SNP conference on the 19th of March in Edinburgh. And it's quite possible that if it was put to a vote, that the plan may be defeated because it doesn't have as much support as might be imagined. So the conference which is looming may well have been looming large in our mind, and losing a vote there would probably end up with her being pushed. So that was quite interesting what you were saying there.
As you've said, there isn't an obvious successor, and I certainly recall when Alex Salmond was still First Minister, but there was rumblings about his going. The name Nicola Sturgeon was on everyone's lips as a sort of an obvious successor at that point in time.
Yes.
There isn't an equivalent at this point. Who are the front runners in your view?
Well, the bookies have already got a front runner, and that's Angus Robertson. Unfortunately, for Angus, he is seen as being too right wing and pro NATO. So that could cause eruptions within the party. The current deputy leader is John Swinney. He might be seemed to be too old for the job. He has been involved with things in the SNP for a long time. And he was, in fact, the SNP leader for a while. While Alex Salmond was taking a little holiday, so to speak. This was a long time ago. So John Swinney is an old figure. But some of the new figures, the younger people, they're not well known outside the Scottish Parliament. They're well enough known to the voters that voted them in the local areas, but they're not really that well known on a wider scale. One of them is Katie Forbes, but she's just very recently had a baby, and it's unlikely that she would be standing for such an office.
Graham, it's been a pleasure to speak. We just had a comment from a caller. I can't decide if Nicola Sturgeon resigning is a good thing or not. It's sad to see a strong female leader go, but it shows great responsibility to be able to say I'm out, unlike male leaders who often never let go of the position despite being well past their sell-by date. An interesting comment indeed, particularly maybe given that the last international high-profile stepping down of a premier was in New Zealand, which was also a very strong female leader by coincidence. Graham, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for your perspective, and we shall, of course, be watching this space with interest.